Anda bersama SBS Bahasa Indonesia. Dapatkan lebih banyak lagi cerita bagus di sbs.com.au/indonesia.
Kali ini salah satu yang dibahas dalam hadirnya Pak Steve di studio SBS adalah juga berhubungan dengan kegiatan dari AIA, dari AIA di bulan pahlawan yang lalu di bulan November. Ini berhubungan dengan Kaura masih. Ini sebagai background juga pendengar mungkin pernah mendengar di SBS juga kita pernah bicara dengan Pak Frans Simarmata. Tentang kunjungan rekan-rekan diaspora juga ke Kaura untuk memperingati Hari Pahlawan 10 November. Nah, ini yang paling baru di tahun 2025 ini dari AIA yang mengadakan acaranya. Begitu ya, Pak. Ini boleh disampaikan gambarannya, kegiatannya bagaimana pada saat itu?
Iya, tanggal November 10 itu kan Hari Pahlawan, ya, Heroes Day. In Indonesia, for all the freedom fighters in the past. And every year, the Indonesian community across Australia, mainly from Sydney, some from Canberra, and many from Victoria and Queensland, and some from back in Indonesia, we all have this annual pilgrimage to Kaura. Why Kaura? Kaura is known as the town for peace and reconciliation. You know, in Kaura, there is a bell there called the Peace Bell. There's only 12 of them around the world. The first one was put up in the United Nations building in New York. And for Australia, instead of putting it in Canberra, they decided to put it in Kaura because of this recognition of a peace and reconciliation center for basically the world, not just Australia. And can I just tell you a story about this? It embodied what Kaura is all about. And what it means, yeah,
sure.
Orang Indonesia. Imagine it's 5 o'clock in the morning on the 5th of August, sometimes in 1944, just almost at the brink of the end of World War II. A train just stopped at Kaura Station. Two Australian Army guards stepped out, and suddenly there are all these people, strange people. Wearing strange clothes, kebaya, you know, sarong, they walked out. But if you imagine it's in August, it's actually in the middle of winter. They weren't prepared for the cold winter. And they were there to be interned next to the Japanese prisoner of war camp. The funny thing about it is that they're not soldiers. They're not just men. They are men, women, and children. So it's a little bit strange, Anne Scully, to have this crowd of people turning up. And there they were to be interned because the Dutch at the time, they want to take back Indonesia, recolonize it. And the Dutch had made a secret agreement with certain ministers in the Australian government of the day to have these prisoners to be interned in Australia until the war end, and then they can do what they like with them afterwards. The problem is that it's illegal. They shouldn't have done that. The Constitution doesn't allow it, but they did it. And as soon as they were interned in the camp, the doctors who treat them didn't know what to do with them because they do have tropical disease, and they weren't trained to deal with tropical disease. And a few of them died because of that. A few of them died because of hypothermia because it was so cold. And these doctors and nurses start spreading the news to the local population, and they were up in arms to find out that's what's happening. And they discovered that these Indonesians, they're actually not from the army, not military, not prisoners of war. They are political prisoners. And so they make a big hoo-ha about it. And so it got into the earshot of all the government, and they put a stop to all that. They released them, and eventually they all ended up in Australia, different parts, working with Australian wages. And then this is actually the start of the independence movement of Indonesia. Not in Indonesia, because they were still fighting the Japanese. It was in Australia, because they formed what is called the Indonesian Club in Sydney at that time, full of Indonesians and with Australian supporters, some actually intermarry. That's another story to talk about. And then what happened is that the independence movement grew and grew and grew in Australia, centered in Sydney, and the Maritime Union, the war fish, find out about it. And as soon as the war finished, you know, the Dutch want to take them all back and to resupply the ship to go back to Indonesia to try and recolonize Indonesia. But the war fish found out about the independence movement, about the desire by Indonesian to be an independent nation, and they stopped that. This is what is called the Black Armada. Now, I know it's a long story, but it is important that your audience understand the significance of this. And that is, the Black Armada means that all Dutch ship will not be resupplied. None of the original political prisoners will go back on the ship to go back to Indonesia. And what happened is that it created a ruckus internationally. There are many other nations adopted the Black Armada stands. They do not want to load Dutch ship or let them go whatsoever. And that put a stop to the Dutch desire to get back into Indonesia, and that helped the Indonesian freedom fighters to get, you know, to get a bit of leeway in their fight for freedom. Now, if I may just extend this, just one more very important issue. The United Nations was formed. It's in its early days. Indonesia want to make a bid to become a fully pledged sovereign nation. To do that, the charter required for a sponsor nation to sponsor that initiative. No nations want to do that at the time, because all they would think about, look, let's just the Dutch take back Indonesia, and then maybe later they can have a referendum and they will decide independence. But for now, it's Dutch territory, except for Australia. Australian politicians heard about what happened in Cowra, what happened also with the Black Armada, and Australia government of the day decided to sponsor Indonesia. If it wasn't for Australia, Indonesia would not be recognized as a sovereign nation in the United Nations. So I won't go too far on that, and that is the significance of Cowra. If it wasn't for what happened in Cowra, Indonesia in some way would not gain the recognition, the global recognition as a nation eventually.
Pak Steve sempat bilang bahwa mereka dibawa dari Bovendigul, if I'm not mistaken, sampai ke Cowra itu juga karena beberapa petinggi di Australia memungkinkan itu terjadi, begitu Pak? Some people in Australian government, they let that happen.
Yes. At that time, it was very controversial, I must admit. I mean, I wasn't born, you know? I'm still a young guy now, right? It was the pressure from the regional rural area centered in Cowra that add to the dichotomy in the Australian government. Eventually, they had to relent, partly because it's illegal. They couldn't do it. They shouldn't have done that, right? But also, it brings about awareness by the grassroots Australians. You know, the support and the empathy by people who all they have to do is just hear one of the public broadcasts, you know, whether it's in a street corner, in a park. There's a place in Sydney where they talk about this. When people hear about the plight of the Indonesians, you know, public opinion swung in their favor. And the government had no choice unless they wanted to be voted out, you know, of the day. So, yeah, I must admit it was controversial to begin with, but it was a no-brainer later on. And eventually, it paved the way for an amazing relationship in Australia and Indonesia for the last 80 years.
And you are the one who's like a big player in...
Well, funny you said that, because I mentioned about the Indonesia Club. That morphed into, would you believe, this amazing organization called the Australia-Indonesia Association. A lot of the protagonists of the Indonesia Club, the leaders of this freedom movement, they became, you know, office bearers, you know. Yeah. I don't know if any of them become treasurer like me, you know, special person, but they become presidents and vice presidents and all that stuff. And the good thing about them is they intermarry each other. Yeah. And in those days, you know, the discriminations for intercultural is quite rife, right? But they dare to marry each other, and with or without the blessings of their own parents, which is another story. I've got so many stories to tell
yes.
you, dear. I just...
Betul, Pak. Right. Okay. Kalau kita kembali dulu, kalau kemarin dari kunjungan yang terakhir kemarin ke Kaura, Pak Steve juga ke sana November. What can you see, Bapak? Karena
For the last, I don't know, 5-10 years, I've been coming around for the last 5 years, I'd say, it's usually the same activities. We go to the Peace Bell. It's a huge Japanese brass cast iron, you know, bell, and to just dong it to signify we want peace. You know, why can't we have peace in this world, right? In some way, to become an independent nation requires peace to prevail. So that's the starting point. That's on this. It's a whole weekend of activities, Saturday and Sunday. That's on the Saturday, and then we visit the old camp where the Indonesians were interned during that time, and we had the Kaura Heritage Society and the Kaura Breakout Association, because another story, but the Japanese did try to break out of their POW camp. Many were killed, right? Yeah. And they want to, commemorate that on a yearly basis as well. But they also touch the Indonesian, because in the camp itself, one sector is dedicated to Indonesians' prisoners, political prisoners. So they interact with each other, the guards and even the prisoners. By the way, there were Italian there as well, not just Japanese. Sorry, just want to make it complete for you.
Yeah.
And so that afternoon, it was more of a heritage walk. Make people kind of relive the path that they took and how they live. You know, imagine it. There's a few structures left, it really very emotional, very overall for first timer to go there to see this happen. And to many people, even the locals aren't aware of this. That wow, there's an Indonesian angle here. There's an Indonesian heritage story, history, joint history with Australia. We didn't know that, right? And it's not celebrated enough in today's context of multiculturalism. You know, we tend to forget these things, right? I know it happened 80 years ago, but still, it shaped our future. It shaped a bit of the multiculturalism in Australia because of the immigration from Indonesia. That night, Saturday night, we usually hold a dinner festival, you know, a bit of performance here, maybe gamelan music or angklung, a local school, or even, some Javanese or Balinese dance if we can, right? And that's mainly to reach out to the locals, to give them an awareness of the Indonesian diaspora that exists in Australia. Then the most solemn moment would be the next day, Sunday. We start off by going to the grave. There are 13 Indonesians kept there that died during the days when they were interned. And these are not just adults. There's one child there, and even one person. They don't know who it is. They couldn't figure it out. But there are 13 there. That's where we lay wreath. And this is where we have just everybody that's important, all the VIPs turn up, the local members, federal and state and the local councils. And then you got diplomatic corps, Congen, from Sydney, from the ambassador, Siswo himself turns up without fail every year, which shows you how he placed importance to this occasion. And then after that, we do, we have an iman there, who can provide the prayer both in Arabic, in Bahasa Indonesia, and in English. He's a fantastic guy. After that, we go to the Japanese garden, where there's a reception held by a Kaura Council, and that's where more speeches, political speech and all that kind of stuff, you know, how good the relationship is with Indonesia and Australia, all that jazz, you know, the usual political pitch. And then we have scones and tea and all that stuff. Yeah, and it's mainly networking. It's mainly to catch up with old friends, that kind of stuff. And this year we had guests, I think 5 or 6 guests from Indonesia, orang yang paling penting. Yeah, brigadier generals, top generals from Indonesia came by to pay their respect to the graves. And they didn't know anything about this. They were told to go and find out what it's all about. And they were amazed, totally amazed. Well, that's an understatement. It's more than amazed. I don't know what another word better than amazing, but they were really, really touch. And so they now want to make this a very important activity for people from Indonesia of significance leadership to come by on a yearly basis. Now, in the future, what the AIA, we are the primary organizer of this, we'd like to expand this to more like a weekend festival to bring about awareness to the regional population. The Kaurna people, most of them don't know anything about this, which is a shame. So we want to partner up, get some stakeholders like local schools, children to sing in Bahasa, to learn to Angklung, for example, and to perform in next year's Hari Pahlawan. Yeah? And we wanted to have a program of billeting Indonesian postgrad students in Kaurna to live a country life, you know, in a farm. Yeah, the thing that amazed me in Sydney with Indonesian students, they keep to themselves. Do you see that? They don't really engage the local population as much as they could have. So what we're going to do, we're going to get them out of their comfort zone and put them into Kaurna and be a farmhand for, you know, a week. And then we have this weekend celebration. So we have all this planned in 2026.
Yeah.
Centered around the 10th of November for the Indonesians and the Australians, local Australians, to get to know each other and to really appreciate the joint heritage that we have. And hopefully that the government will take notice by, I hope, granting us a grant or two to fund this initiative.
Sukai, berbagi, komentar. Ikuti SBS program Bahasa Indonesia di Facebook.